It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic. When I can, I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hit that there and we
Sorry
will...
Sorry for that.
That's... No, that's...
The views given on the following program are not necessarily the views of the station management or staff. Since individual situations can and will be different, please remember this when exercising any options presented by our guests.
Success is equated with success. The ambition for excess wrecks us. As the top of the mountain becomes the bottom line, where success is equated with success.
This is Care for My Wealth. With Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, your fee-only investment firm. Now, here's your Care for My Wealth guy, Chris Klein.
And happy Saturday morning to you. This is Care for My Wealth right here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Joined this Saturday morning, as we are each and every week, by Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. You can learn more about Chris and the whole team at Capstone Wealth Management all online. The website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And you can email Chris info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. And Chris, every time I think we live in amazing times, I'm reminded that we've still got a long way to go. And even in the world of technology, there's still plenty of room for for progress and improvement. Good morning, my friend.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, indeed. I was just, technology makes me want to sometimes put my face through a plate glass window.
Ever fantasized about being stranded on a desert island? May not be the worst thing sometimes. We've got a lot of really important stuff going on. I think before the program, I think you kind of described it as a lot of odds and ends, but there is kind of an underlying or an overlying, probably the better term would be overlying, thing going on, which is inflation. And inflation is driving everything, isn't it, Chris?
It really is. And it's global inflation. It's not just this little bit of inflation that might be going on, around the world or around the United States in grocery prices, which everybody sees. The way to view it and the way to understand it is what's happening in the interest rate cycle too. So the US 10-year treasury interest rate, as you know, is a, to us, very, very important indicator and metric as it relates to reflationary activity, not just in the economy, but of course, when I say economy, viewed from the context of the rate of change or acceleration of GDP, but from the rate of change or acceleration of CPI, PPI, all the data points that get fed into to give us a picture of what inflation is. And first off, if you're listening to anything that anyone says from the government, you got to stop. I'm guaranteeing you they don't know anything about what's happening as it relates to fundamentally the movements of the rate of change of inflation, or they don't care. Either or, ignorant or I don't care is not a good combination. And right now, that's exactly what you're getting out of everyone in the government, from you name it, all the way down right into the Fed, and they're working hand in hand. It's just not a good place to be from a standpoint if you're attempting to build your portfolio off of anything that they're saying. So that's number one. And number two, the movements that we've had in equity markets over the last couple of weeks have been interesting for a whole host of reasons. And yesterday was something that we call quadruple witching day.
Oh,
it wasn't Yeah, it wasn't 4 days of Halloween or anything like that wrapped into one. Quadruple witching refers to 4 days during the calendar year when contracts on four different kinds of financial assets expire. The days are the third Friday of March, June, September, and December. And obviously, we had the third Friday of September yesterday. So those assets that those contracts expire on and expired yesterday, in fact, are stock options, single stock futures, stock index futures, and stock indexed options. And of course, everyone hears me talk about the option expiration that takes place every single month. Every single month, we've gotten this, what we call a hedge fund puke, right into the expiry of that option date, which again was yesterday. And if you go back all the way into January and look at the days where the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ dropped into the bottom and then started to reaccelerate from there, that bottom came when the options expiration took place. And a lot of it is because of how the hedge fund community is mispositioned as it relates to the acceleration and reacceleration of not just GDP, but the inflation data. And so, you know, when we look at how this quadruple witching in particular was affecting markets going into yesterday, you literally had this massive, like, I don't know if people don't like the term, Sean, but this is the industry term that's used. You had this massive puke right into the close of the market. And the, you know, and a lot of it was brought about because of this hedge fund positioning. They're not positioned appropriately as it relates to the movement of the acceleration of the data points. And that's not abnormal. Consensus is mispositioned. They're net short the S&P 500. They're net long U.S. Treasuries. I mean, they're net long the U.S. dollar. It's very opposite of a trending basis. I don't care so much about a day, although a day is important because a day can turn into a week can turn into a month can turn into a quarter, and now you've got a trend, right? So a trending basis always starts with a day, but a day doesn't make a market. And so yesterday we had this quadruple witching, and we had a lot of activity going on. A little bit more volatility than what we would normally see happen, and certainly a little bit more volume, which, you know, is not abnormal when you get a quadruple witching environment, because there's a lot of buying and selling of various contracts, which results in a lot of buying and selling of the underlying securities as well. And so obviously this stuff is taking place in what we believe to be a fairly seasonally weak month anyway. September happens to be the most seasonally weak month of the year. A lot of people equate it to be October. It's not. It's actually September. And that's fine. You know, I'm not a big believer or follower of seasonality kinds of trends, but it's a thing. It does exist. You know, there's enough data points and enough history to be able to look at it and say, yeah, okay, that's an issue. We should probably at least recognize it and respect that it's there. But the more important things are to recognize that we continue to have a whole host of things taking place. First of all, when we do the calculus of price, volume, and volatility, that gives us our guardrails of the movement of any particular asset class in any given day, we continue to see a couple of things absolutely stand out to us. And one of them is interest rates. Interest rates on the U.S. 10-year Treasury have this week been making what we call higher highs. Now, that's a reflection of the movement of the price of the yield of the U.S. 10-year Treasury itself, but also a reflection of the volatility and the volume of the thing going on underneath the surface that nobody sees, right? Unless you do this every day. And when you get a higher high on the calculation of that process, what it's telling you is that the market is setting itself up for a potential increase in reflationary activity. Well, if you get a setup for an increase in the potential of reflationary activity, interest rates go up in that cycle. What cycle is that? That's quad two. That's where you get growth that is accelerating along with accelerating inflation. And if there's any one thing that we've got absolutely happening across the board, it's inflation accelerating. Oh, by the way, did you know lumber was up 30% month over month? Uranium was up 60% month over month. Oil was up 7.9% month over month. Natural gas going into the winter, nonetheless, up 32.3% month over month, and only up 108% so far this year. Just in case if you're wondering where the inflation is, it's coming out of your pocket on stuff you buy. You might not buy uranium, of course, but let's face it, most everything else you're buying, right? Well, the interest rate market is telling us that, yeah, that's not an abnormal thing to expect when we're watching interest rates do what they're doing. So yesterday we had the 10-year Treasury tap the top level, or got really, really, really close to the top level of the calculus for the particular day. The U.S. 10-year Treasury, we had a range yesterday of 1.28 to 1.4. And intraday, it got all the way up to as high as 1.39. So 1/100th of a point off. Sorry. It was close. So what would happen now? Well, chances are it goes back to the other side over the next few days. Does that mean that interest rates are going to start collapsing and we all of a sudden have this massive deflationary cycle that everybody keeps calling for? And that's why the street's mispositioned, by the way. They're anticipating deflation, which would cause the US dollar to go up, which, by the way, you got the dollar up yesterday, but you get that. How many times have we talked since January, Sean, of a quad four deflationary scare that forced interest rates down and at the same time forced the US dollar up? I can't tell you how many times we've talked about it. It's been a lot. Well, yesterday we had the opposite. We had the dollar up with interest rates moving up too. Why would interest rates be moving up if in fact we're running into a deflationary wall? Good question. We're not. The dollar is just doing what it's ordinarily going to do when it's got to shake a lot of people out of the system. It does that. But when interest rates are moving up, it's telling us that global yields are telling everybody that it's global inflation. It's not just here in the U.S., it's across everywhere. It's global inflation. So that's one of the biggest things that's jumping out at us right now. The other thing, of course, is just volatility itself. And when I say volatility itself, it has a lot to do with the VIX, which is broad S&P 500 volatility, VXN, which is NASDAQ volatility, RVX, which is small cap volatility, OVX, which is oil volatility. I mean, I could go on down the line of the out-of-box types of symbols that you can use to punch in to get a glimpse into what volatility might be doing across the board. And what we continue to see is a breakdown in those volatility metrics, but they spike going into the actual options expiration of the week or the month, or in this case, the quarter, right? Quadruple witching happens just four times a year. So you anticipate or expect an increased degree of volatility. Now, this week, we expected to some extent, seeing hedge fund managers and some of the other larger type money movers out there to kind of front run that. Well, they front ran it to a certain extent. We got some volatility certainly this week where it was tapping the top ends of this trending range, and it's trending in a downward fashion. And so when that happened, it was kind of like, you know what? There's a lot of stuff out there that is acting really awesome, and we probably want to buy some. We want to buy some of the things that work well, both in a stagflationary cycle, because we're not out of that yet, and in a reflationary cycle where we see GDP and CPI actually accelerate from the most recent amount on a quarter over quarter and a year over year basis. So looking at that rate of change data, right? And so in doing that, the things that continue to be to us very valuable, important positions to consider is the tech, the real estate, energy, very high quality type positions and names that would be a style factor, as we call it, secular growth kind of positioning, you know, and then of course moving into some of the more quad two kinds of things that are giving us some signals, like, you know, the mid cap ranges of things and whatnot. If you're sitting in a bunch of bonds, you just got to be careful of that, because it's likely, based on what the data is telling us, that we could start to see a retrending increase in the U.S. 10-year Treasury, which of course would negatively affect a lot of different types of bonds, but especially treasuries in general. So there's a lot of rate of change data. I'll touch on some things as it relates to retail sales that I think is probably going to surprise a few people based on what you hear on TV. I'll touch on some of the movements that we're watching happening in what we call consensus positioning. Consensus positioning primarily moved by the you know, the big hedge fund operations and things like that. The data is, I think, for most people surprising when they consider how the market is moving. And so here we've got the S&P 500 off, what, maybe 2% from its all-time high? It's not like a crash or anything like that. It's literally, we believe, a very, very important and valuable buying opportunity. And yesterday we saw that volatility just ramp itself up again and give us an opportunity to kind of size into the marketplace in certain things, in certain positions that are, you know, more valuable than others. So a lot of stuff to kind of peruse today as we roll through the day.
as you mentioned before the show, a lot of odds and ends as well, and we're going to continue to tie all those together as we talk with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. The website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can also email Chris info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. And Chris, the family and I made a stop to Kohl's yesterday, and I will tell you, I don't know where retail is standing right now, but Kohl's did quite well with our little visit yesterday. What are you seeing with retail sales right now?
Well, yeah. Okay. Good question. So for us, what's important, as you know, is the rate of change data, right? Mm-hmm. The rate of change data controls everything. The data doesn't matter. It's rate of change. In other words, where is the ball going? So for example, question number one that we would ask is, how fast did the U.S. consumption economy slow during these variant narratives that were going on in August? Because we got a lot of that, right? So everybody believed that, oh God, you know, this COVID thing is going to collapse us and we're going to end up shutting down the variants this and the variants that, and, you know, nobody's going to shop. Okay, whatever. Question two, how steep was the decline in the alleged U.S. stock market correction? Remember, a correction really doesn't happen until you hit 10%, right? Yeah, okay. So what's another question? How sensitive are people to the narrative that, quote, consensus is really, really bearish? In other words, man, the market is off 2% from its highs and the whole world's bearish. A lot of people believe that, right? Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, on the consumption front, U.S. retail sales, you know, again, that was reported on Thursday of this week for August. And U.S. retail sales were up 15.1% on a year-over-year basis in August. That's 15.1% in July, right? No acceleration, no deceleration. 2 months in a row, up 15.1% on a year-over-year basis. Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So what we then do, because we're dealing with base effects that include a pretty weird time, i.e. the beginning stages flow through of the pandemic type stuff. So you look at it on a two-year basis. So on a two-year basis, retail sales actually accelerated to 9% in August versus 8.9% in July. Right. Well, that's an acceleration. That's important. GDP, if you look at it from a control group for retail sales, it accelerated 12% in August versus 9.4% in July. So then we think, all right, well, what about the depth of this U.S. stock market correction that I'm sure when you turn on the macro news and the talking heads are flipping around because the S&P is off 1% or whatever the number might be, it's not that big a deal, right? Coming into this week, there was a net short position in the S&P 500 of 22,822 contracts. Now, in and of itself, that doesn't give you much context. So let me continue on with that just to try and help it make sense. And again, what I'm talking about is consensus futures and options positioning. This is the stuff that the big boys will use to position themselves either long, they own it, or short, they've sold it. Long, they own it, they believe it's going to go up. Short, they don't own it, they've sold it, they expect it to go down, then they buy it back, right? So those are what those two contexts mean. So coming into the week, again, net short position in the S&P 500 at 22,822 contracts. There was a net short position of 56,321 futures and options contracts in the Russell 2000, which is small caps. What's that tell me? It's telling me that consensus believes both the S&P 500 and the Russell 2000 to just go down and not give anybody any reprieve. Well, there was a net long position, meaning they owned it, of a positive 44,467 contracts in the U.S. 10-year Treasury bond. Now, again, let me put that into context. If we measure and map the market positioning on a week-over-week and month-over-month basis, which of course we do, and within the context of how positions move relative to their prior position, it's called a Z-score, the maximum long position on the S&P 500 over a three-year look-back was a positive 245,514 contracts.
Okay.
That's when the market, i.e. consensus, was bullish. Now, what do we know? We're net short 22,822 contracts. Does that sound bullish to you? If bullishness was really a positive 245,514 contracts?
No.
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 But yet that's what you'll hear out of the macro tourist type news rolling around every day on CNBC and MSNBC and blah, 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 blah. It's the same thing, right? Oh, everybody's bearish. No, they're not. And everybody is not bullish by any stretch of the imagination either. And so what you do is you want to take the opposite position of consensus. That's just how you view this. The options market gives us an incredible amount of understanding of how the market is viewing itself, not just from a survey perspective, but what they're really doing with their money. Because the options movement is telling us that this is the money flowing in and flowing out, right? Mm-hmm. It gives us an opportunity to understand where they expect markets to move, because they're betting real money on that stuff. So that's where the implied volatility data comes into play. It helps us to understand, is the market mispositioned for the price that it currently is at? Because if a whole pile of people are out there in a very, very complacent type mode, we're going to see a whole pile of what are called implied volatility discounts compared to the last 30 days realized volatility of the market. And again, volatility plays itself out based on what the options market is doing, right? If there's a whole pile of people that are scared to death, wall of worry, they keep hedging because this thing's just going to collapse. We're going to go down 10%, 20%, 50%. You're going to have an implied volatility premium because that suggests piles of hedging. The market will climb a wall of worry. In the options market, when these people are hedging, the specialists, the market makers, the people who are moving the money around back and forth actually have to do the opposite. And so you end up with this perpetuation of an upside move when there's a pile of implied volatility premiums laying out there. And so just to give you an example, going into the markets open yesterday, we had the NASDAQ 100 with a 59% implied volatility premium. That's pretty high. The S&P 500 had a 64% implied volatility premium. That's pretty high. Consumer discretionary stocks had a 53% implied volatility premium. That's pretty high. Big tech in general across the board had an implied volatility premium anywhere from 8 to 33%. Energy had a 4% premium. Real estate had a 19% premium. Financials had 39% premium. If we were in a market where deflation was likely the probable outcome and interest rates were in fact going to collapse, you would not see financials as a factor, as a sector, with a 39% implied volatility premium on it. You'd see a big fat discount on it because everybody would be looking at financials saying, man, if interest rates collapse, we're going to flatten, we're going to pancake the yield curve. 2-year treasuries to 10-year treasuries are going to be like nothing. Well, banks can't make money on that. Who would want to buy a financial if a bank can't make money?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That's where these discounts come in because everybody gets complacent. The options market and traders start repositioning themselves. Those discounts develop and it gives you an early clue that something's not right in Kansas. When we see whole piles of implied volatility premiums like this, the only thing it tells us is that there's a lot of worry. The market's not too bullish. And then when you get this opportunity for an implied volatility, or excuse me, a volatility spike on VIX, VXN, some of these other things that can that help us understand where market volatility is at, it gives you an increased degree of probability that you're buying at an okay time. Is it the bottom? That's always hard to say. We measure and map it every single day. We do a pile of math on it every single day to give us the best chance to be a winner, not just today, but the next day. When we're doing something today, or in this case, yesterday, Friday, we're preparing for the next week. We're not just doing it for Friday. We're not just doing it for Monday. We're doing it for the next week. And so we're of the opinion that based on where the quadruple witching went out yesterday, based on where where the volatility measurements went out yesterday, based on where the US dollar went out yesterday. And that's a really, really important element that we'll talk more about today, Sean. Where the US dollar went out yesterday, it's highly likely that those elements are really, 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 really close, if not already there, to have topped out. If volatility tops out and the dollar tops out, what do you get? You get a reacceleration of growth and you get a reacceleration of inflation as the dollar drops. And that's just a function of where we are in this current market sitting on, just by the way, when we look at the US dollar, we're always looking at correlations, how everything in the market correlates to the movement of the dollar. Yesterday, on a short-term basis, 15 days, the S&P 500 had a negative 0.63 inverse correlation to the dollar. What's that mean? Dollar goes down and there's a tailwind to the S&P on the upside. That's what that means. It's that simple, right? When the dollar goes down, commodities go up. When interest rates go up, commodities go up. We're sitting very near all-time cycle highs for the actual amount of commodities that trade in the CRB basket. There's 19 of them. And oh, by the way, lumber is not one that's in there. A lot of people think it is. It's not.
Yeah. And we did a recent show where we touched a little bit more on what's in that basket, what's not in that basket as well. Of course, talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can email Chris as well, info@careformywealth.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, at careformywealth.com. We'll talk dollar. We will do that next as Care for My Wealth continues here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. This is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070, The Game, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Great resource to learn more about Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management. Again, the website careformywealth.com. The telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And you can email Chris, info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. And Chris, before that break, you brought up the dollar. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the dollar and kind of how it's viewed domestically, globally, and by those who follow this stuff. And what are you seeing?
Yeah, so for us, the important thing to understand about the U.S. dollar is, you know, not necessarily its day-to-day movement, which, again, particular things matter very much as they accumulate. But for us, we want to look at them on a time series that typically is longer than a day. And so our time series run on a trade trend and tail basis, which means 3 weeks or less, 3 months or more, and then 3 years or less. And so in doing that, it just gives us an opportunity to identify what is trending, because that's what the machine chases. The machine will chase one month price momentum into a trend of 3 months or more. Why is that important? Because the only time that the US dollar trends higher is in the midst of a deflationary quad four cycle. All right. So you have to ask yourself, based on all the data that we continue to get, and I mean data everywhere, not just here in the US, but across the entire world, you got to look at the numbers and ask yourself, are they accelerating or decelerating? Well, they're accelerating everywhere. I mean, just look at the inflation numbers that we've got over the past month, 2 months, and compare them to where those were over the previous 2 months. They keep surprising everybody in government, saying it's transitory, it's going to go away. We're just going to keep talking until we wish it away, you know, that sort of thing. It doesn't work that way. You know, the data is the data, and inflation doesn't care what someone does or doesn't think. And inflation is trending. And all you have to do is pick up a chart of the CRB index, the Commodities Research Bureau, and ask yourself, does that look higher today than it did 3 months ago? And a fourth grader can look at it and go, yep, that's going up. So it perpetuates itself, certainly over a period of time. So from a dollar standpoint, we're always looking at it on a trending basis. And we want to ask ourselves, is it a bullish trend or a bearish trend? The US dollar is in a bearish trend, and it's been in a bearish trend since it topped out June of last year, 2020. And anybody can go back and listen to the timestamp shows that we've had where we were talking about the dollar topping out and the likelihood where commodities become a very, very, very good buy and that inflation is going to be a thing. Well, you know, here we are over a year later. And yeah, inflation is a big thing. It's ripping people's eyelids off in such a way that it's causing a lot of grief. I mean, you know, obviously there's an increase in wage pressure. And certainly there are many companies who have increased wages, but it's just getting sucked away from people in the cost of the things that they got to buy. And it almost doesn't matter what it is that thing that they're buying. Well, except fruits and vegetables. Hey, good news. Fruits and vegetables has actually decelerated in their inflationary movement. So everybody go buy some. You need to eat more anyway. You know, right?
That's what my doc says.
Yeah, what are they? But, you know, the reality is that we are still in the midst of this cycle where we're seeing the acceleration of data, both on a growth perspective, GDP type numbers, along with inflation type numbers. Growth had decelerated into the end of this third quarter. And now we're in a position where it could be very, very easy to see growth from a GDP basis reaccelerate into the fourth quarter. All we need is 9 basis points of upside movement in GDP predictions, GDP expectations to get an acceleration in the GDP data. Now, Sean, tell me that that's not going to take a whole lot when you're taking into consideration some of the inflation numbers of costs of things that we're watching go up. I think it's a very real probability that we, in fact, re-experience an acceleration into the fourth quarter and through the fourth quarter of those GDP numbers, along with continued acceleration of all the inflationary data that we continue to get. And so for us, what that speaks to is that quad two, quad three type setup, not quad four. Deflation quad four is the kind of thing where the dollar goes up on a trending basis. Now, is it possible we could see the dollar break out above trend, which is right about here? I mean, yesterday, the dollar went out at about 93.25. Trend is like right there. And so from our perspective, it's important to recognize the particular movements of things on particular days going into and through particular things. So we've got the quadruple witching. All right. We already know that consensus is positioned, we believe, in a very misstructured way based on what the data is saying is likely coming. Not what was done, not what we've had, but where it's headed. You take that into consideration on top of the fact that the dollar is probably really, really, really close to seeing a reversal again. Yeah, I mean, this is something that has happened a number of times since June of last year. I'd have to go back and count, but if my memory serves me correctly, it's like the sixth time we've seen the U.S. dollar peak right into some form of options expiration, right into some form of, you know, macro narrative where everybody on TV is talking about the dollar is breaking out. Because it moves up above some crazy single factor moving average or something silly like that versus viewing it from a multi-factor, multi-durational perspective like what we do, right? And so from a multi-factor, multi-durational perspective, we're more interested in seeing the dollar, at least yesterday, based on the math that we were doing, of about 92 spot 98. Well, it got up above that and hit like 93.25. Well, okay, fine. That's not abnormal. It'll do that. Right. You get some movement above where the mathematical equations will give you from time to time. But what does that do? It just increases our confidence that it's going to go the other way. So until something seriously changes in the rate of change data, we're going to continue to be bearish on a trending basis for the U.S. dollar. And when the U.S. dollar hits certain levels like it did yesterday, we want to be doing the things that will benefit from a turnaround or a falling dollar. Like what? Emerging markets. Places like, for example, Saudi Arabia. I know, crazy, right? Places like Russia. Why Russia? Well, they're very oil heavy. And obviously, if the dollar tops out, that's going to be very beneficial for the oil market, at least on a short-term basis. Chances are good that if the price of oil goes up, which we think it will, wouldn't surprise us a bit, by the way, over the next 3 to 6 months to see oil at $100 a barrel or more. That would not surprise me. Am I saying it's going there? No, I'm not saying it's going there because we do the data daily. And yesterday, the best we had was 73 spot 19 on West Texas Intermediate. All right, well, what did it do intraday? Well, it kind of fiddled around and kind of dropped a little bit down to about 71. All right. Well, guess what happened at 71? It was giving us some oversold signals. Can something get a little more oversold? Of course, because it shakes out the weak hands that don't have multi-factor, multi-durational modeling systems based on mathematics, as opposed to sticking their finger in the wind and going, oh, look, everybody's going that way. I should run with them. That's how you get run over in markets, is doing what consensus does. You want to do the opposite of that, right? So we just continue to be in this cycle where everybody starts piling onto one side of the boat. That's consensus. Consensus data is giving us enough of a clarity that they're on the wrong side of the boat based on the rate of change data of what the movement of that data is telling us, right? So does it mean that the dollar is just going to drop like a rock next week? No, not at all. I mean, we could see it pop up a little bit more from here and really scare the pants off of a lot of mispositioned holders. Okay, fine. You know, it is what it is. We got to deal with what the market gives us every single day. But we think it's closer than not to the US dollar topping, which would then perpetuate a movement to the upside in things like the euro, the pound, right? All those kinds of things. But it also comes on the heels of the US 10-year treasury interest rate topping out, right? And I don't mean topping out in terms of its trend. I mean, just topping out on a short-term period. Remember, every single day we develop a macro model that gives us a probable range of motion of every single asset class that's out there. And one of those is the US 10-year treasury yield. I mentioned in the first segment that yesterday, the calculation showed the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield movement as being probable between 1.28% and 1.4%. And intraday, well, what did we get? Well, we got, well, the day before, on Thursday, first of all, it got down to about 1.3%, closed the day at 1.33%. Now, why is 1.3% of the 10-year Treasury important? And I've talked about this a bajillion times over the last 6 weeks, because that's where trend was. Mm-hmm. It does not surprise us that it came down to 1.3%, hit that level, and then bounced higher. The low end of the mathematical range of the U.S. 10-year Treasury popped up yesterday to 1.28%. We're 0.02% away from trend. Well, why is that important? Because if it comes back down to trend and holds, what that tells us is the market is expecting a reacceleration of not just growth, but inflation, just like I said in the beginning of the show. The top end was 1.4. And yesterday we hit a top end of 1.39. So that means it wouldn't surprise us to see US 10-year treasury interest rates or yields drop next week down to trend of 1.3 or close to it, and then reaccelerate. So what does that mean? It just means that there's never one thing. There's a pile of things that all come together to help you to make better choices on, am I in the right place at the right time? Our job is to try and make sure that we're calibrating all the data every single day, making sense of it as best as we're able, calculating along with the rate of change movement of that data, along with the signals that the market are giving us based on price, volume, and volatility, and stay away from collapses. The last time I checked, most people can handle a 1-2% movement in the value of their assets that they hold. That's part of the market, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like it, but I try really, really, really hard to maintain that level or better. And all it does is give you an opportunity to reposition into something that everybody else says, oh, that's it. It's done. It's dead. Well, how many times have we seen that happen with things, for example, like oil, you know, pick it. It doesn't matter. There's a whole host of stuff all year long. There are people that would say the same things about the S&P 500 every time we went into options expiration for the month. Oh, it's coming. It's a crash. Here we go. And then options expire and poof, next month, next week, it just flies right up. The Fed kind of arrested that a little bit starting in May because they screwed up with the low end of the yield curve, the two-year treasuries. They shocked it. They said, hey, we're gonna pile drive the short end of the yield curve higher. And you know that's just going to be awesome because, hey, we're going to trade into it. Show, by the way, did you see that?
No.
All these Fed governors that are trading like multi-million dollar ES five. It's called ESP, the S&P 500 futures ESs. E-mini series of the S&P 500. This pile of these guys that are driving markets like crazy because they're just investing in it. And they're supposed to be the ones making policy and doing things that, you know, they've got insider information. Let's face it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all in the game, too. You know, so the stuff that we're doing is just trying to keep people ahead of the game as best as possible and recognizing that, look, nothing is ever perfect, no matter how you slice it. But if you can look at it from a macro perspective and then position yourself according to what the math is saying, not what a narrative is or what somebody on TV thinks you should think or what the newspaper is telling you, but literally just have a mathematical process that says, look, if this does this, I do that. If this does this, I do that. And I just keep doing the process of if, but then. Just like the mathematical things that you used to do back in the day of writing intelligent equations. If this, then that. Well, that's what this is. If this, then that. If the dollar hits trend at 93.40, we're going to short it because it's likely it's going to go down. We're going to buy more dollar sensitive assets because when they go down, the stuff that we'd be buying goes up. Is that going to happen yesterday? Maybe. Is that going to happen Monday or Tuesday? Maybe. But I know we're close. So that's the idea, not to be perfect, but to be as close as humanly possible, because we do believe timing matters. And we try really, really hard to get that timing right.
And staying ahead of the game, he is Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. The website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And the email, info@careformywealth.com. We'll talk with Chris a little bit about getting to know him and all the great things he can do for you. We'll do that next as Care for My Wealth continues here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. This is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070 The Game, hanging out with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. The website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. If you haven't had a chance to jot down the telephone number, I'll give it a couple more times before the end of this segment. Right now, though, if you got the pen handy, write it down, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Got the phone in your hand. You can pick up the phone, give Chris a call right now. That's 866-596-9886. And the email address, info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. Let's talk, Chris. Obviously, folks who listen to the program today and are regular listeners to the program, they know you're very active. You're very proactive. I think a lot of financial planners might find acceptable. You don't find acceptable. Kind of that set it and forget it and just kind of, you know, oh, it'll come back. You really work to hedge those downsides for folks, don't you?
I do. I'm just not okay with being okay. I don't want that to sound cliche-ish, but literally every single day we're touching the portfolio, trying to position, reposition, adjust, and readjust sizing of the things that the data is suggesting us the rate of change movement is headed towards. And so in doing that, it just provides us an opportunity to stay incredibly in touch with the motion and movement, you know? And so we want to be aggressive when it's appropriate to be aggressive. And we want to be completely not aggressive when it's appropriate to not be. And, you know, so we'll have clients all the time ask us, gosh, is this a good time to invest or should we be out? Should we be changing the policy? And I just always answer, I got it. I'm literally on it every day. There's not a moment of the day where my finger's not paying attention to the movement of the portfolio. And so I know that hard sometimes for people to understand, but we're literally managing the movement of the portfolio on your behalf, doing everything in our power to keep the portfolio from imploding in the midst of a bad deflationary quad four crash. We are able to completely miss the 2020 crash. We completely missed the last half of that crash that took place in 2008. I mean, from October to December, it dropped 30%. We were out. We weren't part of that. So, you know, we've got a pretty good track record of being able to help people through their retirement process of not getting blown up, right? Now, are we going to always beat the S&P 500? No, probably not. But we're not going to do what the S&P 500 does on the downside. And when we miss that, it lets you compound that capital on the upside. That's our objective. That's what we're attempting to do every single day. And so, client wants to know what we own. Just email me or text me. I'll tell you exactly why, because I'm the guy that decided to do it. and our own family and our own employees' assets are doing the same thing. So, I mean, it's not like we don't put our money where our mouth is. We do.
Yeah. And that email address is info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. Hope you grab that pen. It's time now for the telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And the website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Chris, you have a fabulous weekend. Great talking with you, my friend, and we'll talk real soon.
Thanks, man. You too. We'll see you.
This is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070, The Game.